Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, we chat with poet Naoko Ujimoto, a senior editor at Rhino Poetry. She stopped by the AWM the other week to discuss the work of translation, her poetry process, and her forthcoming book titled Of Women, 20 Japanese Female Poets, 20 Waka Poems. This conversation originally took place April 28, 2026, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the AWM Author Talks. I'm excited to chat with Naoko Ujimoto about her new book, Of Women, 20 Japanese Female Poets / 20 Waka Poems. Naoko, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Nate.
Yeah, I finished your book over the weekend, and it was great. It was fascinating, the poetry, the act of translation, the visual art as well. So there's a lot in it that I'm excited to talk to you about. But I was wondering if you could introduce yourself a little bit, give our listeners a little bit of your background and the new book.
Yes, thank you. Hi, my name is Naoko Ujimoto. I'm originally from Nagoya, Japan. I came here as an exchange student at Indiana University, South Bend, and I moved to Chicago. Now I'm with Rhino Poetry. So Rhino Poetry was founded in 1976. So this year we are celebrating the 5th anniversary. So we are very much excited, and there are so many reading events and workshops. So if you're interested, then please visit the Rhino Poetry website and social media. And then also I'm writing, keep writing, and promoting my book, Of Women.
Yes, thank you. And listeners, we have some links in our episode description to visit Rhino Poetry and all of their great work. So yes, tell us a little bit more about Of Women. How would you sort of encapsulate it for our listeners, if you could?
Of Women is a translation anthology. I selected 20 female waka poets. So waka poems composed with 5-7-5-7-7 Japanese syllables, and they are kind of similar to haiku composed with 5-7-5 Japanese syllable, but waka has 14 syllable longer.
Yeah.
And also waka has a longer history. So haiku is actually relatively new format. So haiku formed around 1600, and you know, the very famous Matsuo Basho, haiku master Matsuo Basho, is around 1600. But waka is formed around the 7th to 8th century. Some scholars say 7th, some scholars say 8th, but as you know, it's a very long history, and waka known as old Japanese classic poem, but we still have a 5-7-5-7-7 Japanese syllable short format as well, which called tanka.
Okay.
And tanka is still popular in Japan, also outside of Japan. So I translated those waka poems into contemporary translation format.
Wow, yeah. Thank you for that. And so they're all of the poems that translated waka format, but then you also include some other forms like haibun and in your visual poetry. So maybe now's a good time to talk about that, sort of the threefold approach to translation that you used. Like you wrote, it is one translation just wouldn't be enough because of the form of waka and its sort of the importance of performing it, the sounds that are generated, the breath. It was important. So how did you do that sort of threefold approach, and what other forms did you use to accomplish that?
Yes, exactly. So waka 5-7-5-7-7 Japanese syllable contains so much information, you know, love, loss, you know, memory or nature or any types of topics. So I approached to three sections. So the first, as you mentioned, kind of a haibun style. Well, technically haibun is not the right term, maybe, but I use it because haiku and paragraph together called haibun, but this is waka, so wakabun.
I like a new one, a new form, yeah.
but a haibun concept, but those first paragraph is not translation. That's first, and the second is a translation, and the third approach is visual approach. So when I translate the waka poem, for example, if I'm translating Seishonagon, I want it to become a Seishonagon. I want to feel or absorb what she saw, what she felt, how did she approach one text and then wrote one poem. So I studied about her, I visited places, and then I tried to become Seishonagon in a way. That was my first paragraph. So first narrative, lyrical fiction, and that is the first paragraph.
Yeah.
And then translated her poem using text collage. So traditionally, there are many waka or haiku translations out there, but it's 5-7-5-7-7. So five lines as a one paragraph, or haiku 5-7-5, three lines as a one paragraph.
Right, okay.
Or one stanza. I think now Japanese translation, like especially Japanese traditional pieces, are facing to the new translation era, which means that, like, for example, Dante's Inferno. There are so many versions of Dante's Inferno out there,
right.
Theatrical or musical, or the William Blake's pictures version, or Mary Jo Bang's contemporary approach. So I think now Japanese waka poems or any type of classical Japanese literature are meeting the second phase of the translation. So that's I wanted to also introduce, because some scholars said we may not have a concept of line breaks in old form. So even though 5-7-5-7-7 as a kind of line breaks, but they may not have a concept of line breaks. There is a two reason. One is there may be a performative, so it's a musicality, or they perform a poem in front of the people, may not show as a text, but also they have a calligraphy version, which is they focus on letter, and so line breaks, it doesn't matter, focus on letter. So it's more visual format. So I wanted to use those freedom to introduce into my translation pieces.
Yeah, and I think it comes across beautifully in the book. It's fascinating what you got me thinking. Like, so it's the line breaks are kind of only happened way later, perhaps, than when these wakas were originally written. So is it more of like the line breaks happen for sort of Western readers to make sense of it?
Very good question. So when waka became popular was about 800 years ago.
Okay.
The editor's name, Fujiwara no Sadaie. So Fujiwara no Sadaie and Fujiwara no Teika are the same person. But in English, Fujiwara no Sadaie is popular. But in Japan, Fujiwara no Sadaie is popular, but the same person. So this editor, Fujiwara no Sadaie, was asked his friend, I am making a new house. I want to decorate. What do you have? Do you have any good idea? And he said, how about to decorate your house with 100 poems by 100 poets? That is the origin of one of the famous waka anthology. And then Fujiwara no Sadaie chose 100 poems and then start decorating his house, his friend's house. That was a beginning, and the line breaks were introduced later when people are studying waka, because 5-7-5-7-7 is as a format. Also, they have some sorts of grammatical study or any additional study to it. So, like, for example, Onono Komachi, she's another poet, female poet. She doesn't follow 5-7-5-7-7 syllable. So some other people said, oh my goodness, she's not following this 5-7-5-7-7 syllable. And then, you know, like, so she can be a contemporary poet, but also maybe taboo back then.
Right.
See?
Yeah.
So even though we have a kind of break and we studied as a line, as a five lines, but overall, this concept of line breaks maybe not very strict in ancient Japanese culture
at the time. Yeah,
right.
Interesting. Yeah, and I was also fascinated by the role poetry played in ancient culture, and the role female poets had mm-hmm. also. Like I was reading it, it's like we know of love letters, right? But the Waka love poems were so, I think, deeper because of the brevity, and also, if correct me if I'm wrong, but they kind of served a social function as well, as mm-hmm. far as like mm-hmm. asking for someone's hand in marriage or something. So I was fascinated by the importance of poetry in ancient Japanese culture.
Yeah, it's Waka is so interesting once you study. So when I start translating, I was not interested in translating at all. Mm. But people ask, during the pandemic, people asked me to read translation pieces. Then I thought it's unfair to judge all the pieces if I don't have a translation processes.
So right. Okay. You yourself as a translator, you don't know necessarily what that's like.
Exactly.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
So okay. That's the reason I start translating, but I didn't want to commit. So I wouldn't like to have a permission by current author or copyright. So I used dead poets.
Yeah, public domain.
In public domain. Yeah. And then this is my high school textbook, which oh, wow. I used from the beginning. Then I started researching further and then more academic journals or historical books. But as you can see, I know it's a podcast, but as you can see, there is beautiful pictures. And the first poem is autumn poem, and it's a Japanese phonetic in all the Japanese. So current Japanese and their Japanese are very different. So if we communicate to people 1,200 years ago, we may be able to communicate 30%, maybe
really?
Like 60%. It's wow. a little different.
Yeah.
Then there's a translation in contemporary Japanese and little dictionary in the bio. And then also, this is also interesting. All the poets use all the poets' poetry works to reuse to create their new work. So what I meant is Matsuo Basho used the Waka poem to his haiku poem, and he published as his work. It's common that kind of reusing it, or in a way plagiarism.
Yeah, right, like plagiarism, or like yeah. But is it you're saying off their own work?
Off their own work.
Yeah,
and then there's a happen to those things. So
that is fascinating. Yeah,
it's very interesting. So once I start reading those details, it's kind of falling into a rabbit holes. Then I start learning more about writers, and especially female. Back then, I'm not sure they are respected as we do now.
Okay. Yeah.
So they wrote in hiragana, which is called feminine letters. Used to be a Chinese kanji letter, so it's very square and very hard-looking, masculine-looking letters. But Murasaki Shikibu or Seisho Nagon start writing in hiragana, and people kind of look down on it. Mm. But it's also interesting. They're the one male poet, his name is Kino Tsurayuki. He wrote in hiragana, but his first sentence is, I think I'm going to write in hiragana and pretend to be a girl. Kind of like he's excusing to use hiragana, but other scholars think he wanted to write in hiragana because he lost his daughter. So this softness, a hiragana, you know, like a female letter may suit for him to write emotional pieces, or, you know, kind of like a meditating, you know, inner self after his daughter's loss. So that's another very interesting part of researching about Jess. Then I become more serious about translating only female writers.
Yeah, I see. Wow. So you said beginning of when COVID was happening, the early onset of COVID is when you really fell into this rabbit hole. So not that long. You've been interested in the process of translation. Yeah.
It's really new, definitely. I never thought I'm going to translate it. I'm Japanese. Japanese is my first language.
Right.
And I wanted to be a English writer all the time. So I never really expected.
Yeah.
But it's just project, as we talked about three approaches, so the hybrid style, translation style, and then art style, and then a little bit about study guide, it's definitely fun to express myself.
Nice, yeah. That's it, because it's fascinated by what you said about wanting to sort of embody these poets, the 20 poets that you chose, and you know, visiting the actual physical places where it's, many of these poems were written also adds another layer to the translation process to understand what was going on when the poem was originally written. But it's also great to hear that you're, even within that process, you're finding ways to express yourself too within that translation and the sort of embodiment. Do you feel like, did you feel any sort of, I guess you kind of said it, like yourself was transforming as you were doing the translation, like any sort of like internal, yeah, fascinated by that.
Yes, I think I'm being more myself. Well, for a long time, I wanted to write English perfectly.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I also learned I may not be able to write English as a native speaker would. So that was a conflict for my last 20 years since I was a college student. But now I'm much more comfortable or confident being myself. And I think awkward syntax or any other strange, as you can hear now, my English is, my English teacher said, oh, Naoko, you are speaking like a Naoko English. Yeah. That they said, my teacher said. But maybe that is a good thing, yeah. Since because AI or any other computer system is creeping into our creative society. So maybe I may not be able to be duplicated as easy.
I like that. Yeah, I love that thought. you're doing great. I love the idea of being, yeah, you're undetectable by AI, because you're your own. I love that. I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the female poets you chose.
Yes.
There's 20 of them. They all are fascinating lives, because another part that you do provide is a little bit of biographical information on some of these writers, where biographical information is available, which is also another aspect of this. But yeah, I'm curious your process in the research process and all, as well as selecting the poets and the specific poems from them. I just would love to hear more about that.
So when I decided, so first I was translating both men and then women writers, both male and female writers. Then I focus on females. When I read just a poem by mother of envoys for the Japanese missions to the Tang Dynasty. So
right. So real quick, that is the who is credited with writing this, right? That's the author's
mother
title. Yeah, not the person's name, right? Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of them lost their name, and especially female writers. There's many male poets, also high status males, kept names, but female somehow in Heian era, just era, they lost a lot of names. We are not sure, because previous era, which is a Nara era, the female governors or female names were recorded in governmental documents, but somehow they lost, or they become a nickname, mother of such or daughter of such such. But maybe because at that moment, the most powerful guy, his name is Fujiwara no Michinaga.
Okay.
He was very powerful. He had a political strategy. So his daughter married to emperor, and then emperor will have a son. So Fujiwara no Michinaga get the politics power over the young emperor's kids, prince. So maybe that's why women become some sorts of a political pawn in a way.
Yeah, I see.
And so there is a lot of sad stories behind all the female writers, like especially their main job is waiting.
Right. In reading it, they just have to wait.
Yes. And this mother too. So around the 7th century, there are Japanese exchange program from Japan to China.
Okay.
And they are high status people, all male. and Buddhist monks or something. They went to China and they learned everything, city ideas, medicines or entertainment or poetry or any other things.
Like bronze workings.
Yeah, bronze workings. Have you ever seen the large bronze, like a Buddha statue in Japan? Yeah. That is exactly the idea came from China. Also, the small region close to the lake Biwa. There's lots of foreigner living back then. I mean, foreigner or exchange program people living around there, descendants. So they created the big statue. So yeah, when I read this poem, Mother of Envoys for the Japanese Missions to the Tang Dynasty, I kind of felt like similar, maybe my mother might feel similar feeling towards to me. When I came to here in the United States, I was 16.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm not very proud of, but I was almost high school dropout. I didn't go to high school very well. The reason why I had a very difficult moment with my teacher at the junior high school. And he told me, this is crazy, but I'm very thankful that I'm here. He told me, well, you are not smart, you are not boy, why do you keep studying? You know that.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
It's unfortunately, there is an unequalness in Japanese society still, 20 years ago as well. But my parents rose my sister and I very well. They gave us the excellent education system, and then my mom decided to ship me to the Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Then I back and forth until I got the exchange student at the Indiana University, South Bend. So my mother might feel like that.
I see. Yeah, that's a very personal poem to your family as well. Yeah, I see.
Correct. So maybe I read this poem.
Oh, yeah. Please do, yeah.
I wonder if you see the same moon. Stars are so spread out and hard to find Orion in my eyes. I harvested your favorite butterball sprouts and boiled them to remove the strings. It would be ready if I pickle them now. Are you hungry? How about hot kuzu root tea? 旅人の宿りせむのに霜降らば。あがこはぐくめ山のたずむら。A traveler sleeps in the field. If it is snowing, hold him, my son, with your feathers, dear celestial cranes. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked that one. And maybe for our listeners, so what you first read was the non-translated sort of
Haibun
style prose to sort of get the reader situated in the atmosphere of when this poem was created, what the writer was thinking, and then the second thing you read was the.
The original text.
And then as you can hear the sort of musicality and the importance of tonality to that. Yes. And then the final thing was your translated poem. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That was great. I'm glad you shared that because that was sort of the process of reading your work was like discovery also. It was fun for me and to kind of think, so this is a mother thinking about their child that's not there. I don't know what that's like, but I can imagine my mother in the same way. And then you read the poem, and I'm glad, I do not know Japanese, so I got the original pronunciation and performance aspect of it almost. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. And it's exactly like very fun to think about being mother 1200 years ago, more than 1200 years ago. And then there is diaries available, old diaries. So I also brought just like a one of diary. As you can see, it's the date and then like what's going on. And it's, so if I read those diaries, I can also understand how hard to travel from Japan to China. Yeah. And some of shipwrecked or some of died or never be able to left from Japan. So they kind of regret it, you know, or we cannot go to China, or stuck in China forever, like 20 years or long time.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, also amazing. There are so many diaries, anthology, poems available, and then survive through civil wars and the World War Second, First and Second.
Right. Yeah.
So I am definitely thankful that people, all of the like, the people who try to carry on just legacy, you know, generation to generation.
Yeah, yeah. Were you, because you mentioned it a little bit, and I think you mentioned it in the book as well, in the acknowledgments, you were able to visit many of these sites.
Yes.
And for the visual art, also collect pieces from yes. these sites, which I thought was very cool. And so maybe talk to us a little bit about the visual aspect, yes. because, well, it looked like, is it collage work?
Mm-hmm.
It looks, yeah, it's just, I would spend time just staring at them and realize, oh no, I gotta read the next one. But yeah, it's, so yeah, tell us a little bit about how you did that. And
yes.
Yeah.
So Obu Woman, I selected all materials from Kyoto and Nara.
Okay.
So I travel after pandemic with my aunt and my aunt and my mother, like,
oh, wow.
like years, also days, for the periods of time.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay.
So I wanted to incorporate the Japanese colors. Like, for example, primary color is red, yellow, blue, right?
Mm-hmm.
So American flag has blue and red, the very vivid blue and red. Japan has that red and blue as well, but also another shades of red, another shades of blue. Red has a shu-iro. Shu-iro means shu, means red, and iro means color, red
okay.
color, but slightly orange color.
Mm.
So maybe 80-90% of that color is red, but added to sunshine, red, or orange or some sort
I see,
of, but yeah. that shuido is popular color for Buddhist shrines or buildings. So if you see the Japanese temples, if you look like a red, that is a shuido.
I see.
So
okay.
I wanted to show that different shades of primary colors were red, blue. There's many colors of green, also purples. So I picked up those beautiful colors. Some of them are local washi papers, or some of them are maybe pamphlets from the hotels that I stayed. But if I see those colors, I cut it and correct them, and then I use them for my creative Obu Woman.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, cool.
Yeah, it's absolutely fun. I think I always started my project with writing,
mm-hmm.
then ended up the visual. Art, but visual art is absolutely fun. It's so fun to work with. Like my previous book, Graphic Poetry Transsensory, that collage have all specific meaning. I collected
yeah.
from all over the world and for the specific poem. So I wanted to do that, but for Obu Woman is, as we know, it's a translation. And then those women writers lived in Kyoto and Nara mainly.
Right.
So I kind of focused on those regions.
Wow, that's cool. That was a cool aspect to learn. It just adds so much more layers of depth to that, because it's like you translated that material that from Japan into a work of art. It's like there's also some translation going on there, perhaps.
That's right. Yes, it's visually translated, like poem to visual art.
Yeah.
Yes, you're
yeah.
right. You're right.
yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other female poets you picked.
Mm-hmm.
Right before we started recording, you mentioned some of them might be more familiar to our listeners.
Yes.
Curious what some of those names are.
So they are famous people like Seisho Nagon, Murasaki Shikibu. So Seisho Nagon wrote Pillow Book,
mm-hmm.
and then Murasaki Shikibu wrote The Tale of Genji. And they are always people think they're rivals, mm-hmm. but they never coexisted on the salon at the Imperial Palace. So I
see.
Yeah. I personally like Seisho Nagon, but also I like Akazome Emon. That's another writer, because there's so many superstars surrounded by her. Akazome Emon, she's kind of not very famous.
I see.
You know,
yeah.
Like, so Izumi Shikibu is also my favorite. She's kind of Japanese first feminist, maybe.
Oh,
and
cool.
Her daughter yeah. is Koshikibu no Naishi. She's very hip, like a slum poet almost, I feel like.
All right, yeah.
And then Akazome Emon is, she had a very wild young age. She had several boyfriends and ended up the two boyfriends, but they're cousins.
Oh.
And ended up one of them passed away. So those dramatic things was all recorded. She left 617 poems.
Wow.
And then all like a telephone book, like a big dictionary yeah. book, and amazingly, you know, survived through 1,000 years. And I love to read them to think about what as I mentioned in the beginning, how they lived.
Right.
You yeah. know, then Akazome Emon, and one of my favorite things of her, she just didn't wait. She also became a ghostwriter.
Oh.
And she also gave advice, like a poetic advice to others.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
she wrote poems for her son. So it's not just waiting. I think some of them are very proactive and try to find who they are during the time. Mm. That's I think
yeah.
one of my favorite. And then Seisho Nagon, definitely. So I will read Seisho Nagon here. A wall is something I built when I see you. It does not matter what type of seal. I draw one, two. A silk curtain, a paper screen, and close it. Shut it hard. I hate the noise of unfitted sliding doors. I don't track where you walk, from a corridor to room. I do not want to sink into your smell. I refuse your voice. I have enough. Ware nagara, waga kokoro mo shirazu shite, mata aimiji to chikaikeru kana. I didn't know who I was, where my heart belonged. But I made a decision not to meet you again. Maybe I was short-tempered. I was wrong. Perhaps I might like you. Thank you.
I liked that one too when I read it for a number of reasons. One of them being the sound of sliding doors that don't. I also do not like that sound. So I was like, oh, yeah. I just thought that was a good metaphor you used there.
Yeah, the Seisho Nagon is definitely has this witty moment. Like Hateful Things is one of her popular essay in English, and she listed all the hateful things. Kind of like a similar vibe to Virginia Woolf in a way.
Oh yeah, okay.
And so yeah, like I think maybe that's why those writers still be loved so much, you know, by many many people from all the world.
Yeah, and you. I think I wrote it down as well. One line that I really liked, I think it was part of your translated works, and I forget which one it was, mm-hmm. but it's long ago and today. Mm-hmm. And I think that was also one of your visual aspects. And that was kind of what I was thinking earlier when we were talking about mothers and just love, you know, and that happened long ago and also very much so today. So I think that's another reason why a lot of their poems still resonate, you know, even like you wrote in the introduction, it's like, even if we don't know their names, I'm paraphrasing here, of course, even if we don't know their names, their poems are still very much alive.
Exactly.
And, yeah. And I think you do a great job of bringing them, not even back to life, because they never were dead, but presenting them in a new way for a new audience.
Yeah, thank you. It's exactly like we as a human, like, you know, like when we are using the text, the phone, like where would you like to go for dinner? Like my sweetheart or whatever, send it to your partner and the partner has a dot, dot, dot. Forever.
That's the
yeah. That's the waka exactly. So the male, usually male person send a waka first to female. So he walk around the house. There is a rumor. Oh, there is maybe the young woman living there. So he research or his servant research.
Oh, and right, because the women weren't supposed to show be outside, right?
Exactly. There, yeah. And then he figured it out, okay, there's a woman, and okay, and he talked to the people in the kitchen or people outside, and then he writes a waka, right? And then send it to the girl. And this girl will be judged by paper, quality of paper.
In her response? Yeah, yeah, the quality of paper, wow.
What's handwriting? Yeah. And what kind of ink they're using, scented or any other gift.
Wow. And this is all for her response to the original waka. It's her waka back is all judged on this.
Yeah,
wow.
Yes. However, it's not gonna be like a personal letter. It's going to be a whole family thing. So her mother will read, father, governess, maybe people around her, everybody will judge the poem. And then she's going to write. But then it's a huge pressure because if she writes horrible poem, he will not respond, right?
Wow.
So she writes it and then send it to the mail. And then maybe back and forth. Then he finally visits to her and for the intimacy reason. Then first time, okay. Second time. And the third time means marriage.
Okay.
But some men disappear before the third time.
Long ago and today.
Exactly. So it's the exactly the same as we are in back then. So I hope people, my readers, will enjoy and kind of imagine and then daydream about their life and maybe they can face to our current life to the ancient time as well.
Right, yeah. The dot, dot, dot is such a great way to put it. Like, yeah, wakas are written in the moment when your partner is dot, dot, dot.
But dot, dot, dot can be 3 days.
True, right.
Or 3 weeks. Yeah. Or some of the time, 3 years.
Wow.
And women, I don't want to say, okay, you know, move on, girl. And I want to say it, but she's just sitting, and then but it's crazy things because of women cannot go outside without permission back then. So they may not have enough sunshine, so she may become sick.
Oh, and right, yeah.
Their legs, because sitting on the floor all day long, so their legs may have a problem or deformed.
Yeah.
And then there's a multiple partner, so male or maybe female may carry on the sexual diseases as well.
Right. Yeah.
This is a very kind of crazy narrative. Even the waka is very elegant and beautiful way, but kind of wild things going on, I think.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, and to, you know, it's like thinking of another modern equivalent, like stressing over a profile pic on your dating profile, right?
Exactly.
But it's like, that's not having to stress over a writing poetry. That's much different.
That's the reason, like a profile picture of the social media is their scent. So they have their own, like, you know, the incense scent, not like a perfume.
Yeah.
It's like smoke incense scent.
Yeah.
And everybody has the exact same smell. So one of our temple, a Byodo in Hodo, that is located outside of Uji in Kyoto, they actually restore by historian, so the one of the old scent. So if you smell this, means the you know, noble monk of this guy, or you immediately know, associate with a scent. So yeah, profile picture is very important to take, you know, selfie or you know, landscape or anything, but scent,
that would be the equivalent. Interesting. Yeah. Wow. I want to not really pivot, but talk kind of more broadly about poetry. It is, as you were well aware, National Poetry Month. We're getting the tail end of that. And you've kind of mentioned it throughout our conversation, but what has poetry meant to you, either personally and then, you know, professionally? It is your profession. So I'm curious the role poetry has played in your life personally.
Can I be very corny?
Of course.
You know that the TV show about soccer game? Poetry is alive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like it. Yes.
So I really...
Say no more.
Thanks for my poetry community is very generous. And I'm with Rhino Poetry, also my publisher, Tupelo Press, and the other community. They are very generous. And I think it's very important current society because... there is always a peace and a war together, and we should be balanced because peace and war, we may not be eliminate war, but we at least we can balance it. But yeah. I think poetry and creative field or mindset, we can push back peaceful side.
Yeah.
And
to try to bring balance.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's I think it's... It's one of my important things, being a poet, and then also as an editor to publish pieces out there.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Like a steward of the contemporary, like a shepherd almost of the contemporary poets writing now. Yeah, wonderful. And... I was thinking more about translation, and I guess the question is, do you have any other translation projects in the works, or ideas, even if it's just a nugget of an idea?
What I'm doing here is I'm running away from translation. I think I loved it, but also there's a tremendous responsibility to translate all the Waka poems, and I'm still nervous to show my work. So my current project is Zui Hitsu Essays, but I call this Man Zui. Okay. So Man means manga, and Zui Hitsu is essay.
Okay.
So there is the essay and the manga. So it's kind of the same concept of haibun, but haibun is usually one paragraph, but zui hitsu is longer form essay,
okay.
More than one paragraph, and then with a little strip of comics.
Comic, right, panels.
Panels, yeah, that's I'm working on, and I'm very excited about it. I think it's... One of my favorite writer, the Japanese writer, is Natsume Soseki. He's very known for the I Am a Cat, and he has a very serious stories as well. But he also funny. He just rambling about, you know, the human's behavior and a point of view of a cat.
Yeah, right.
So kind of similar attitude to Seishonagon's hateful things as well. Mm-hmm. So I am adapting those kind of vibe into my Zui Hitsu writing, and then visual part as a manga. So manzui.
I like that.
Yeah, I created the word.
I was going to say another new form of writing. Yeah.
So I'm excited, very excited about this project.
Wow. Yeah, me too. I can't wait for that one to come
out.
And so that project is upcoming, but Of Women comes out very soon, right? When is it?
Yes, June 1st.
June 1st. Is pre-order available now?
Yes.
Yes, wonderful. Well, there are links in the episode description for you listeners to go and get it. I do recommend it. I wanted also to wonder if you wanted to share one more poem from your collection with us?
Let me share with Akazomemon. The crickets are quiet. Someone walks on gravel. A horse hooves. I open the window a crack. Night breeze teases me. I close it. A moth flies around my candle and flutters shadows. I blow out the light. What a deep black the moon brings tonight. Yasurawa de. I must be already in bed. If you didn't promise to visit me, I stare at the moon as it sinks toward the west. Thank you so much for having me, Nate.
Thank you for joining us, Naoko.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.